know what? Smartphones were probably earlier, but the first iPhone was 2007 as well. So 2017 was, if you like, the celebration of 10 years of the digital age, of a technological revolution, and our lives have been completely changed in the last 10 years. I don't know if you've noticed it, just how we relate to people, the ways we can relate to people, social commentary. Historically, or fairly recently, the West has been seen as an innocence guilt culture, where if you do something wrong, there's right or wrong, and there's innocence or guilt. And the East has been known more as an honor shame culture, which is more complex to explain. So other people here can explain that very well. But people are saying, because of social media, that honor, our culture is changing. We're now moving from a more traditional innocence guilt shame culture into an honor shame one. So if you see this multiple, this breakout of honoring people, for not because they're right or wrong, but there's just a breakout of honor over certain things, and there's a breakout of shaming and vilifying over certain things. I don't know if you've noticed that shift. So it's massive. It shifted so many different things. We multitask a lot more now. We do multiple things at the same time, and so on. And so there's been endless debate about distraction. Has been this big kind of buzzword. Vivienne Westwood, who's a famous fashion designer, so very creative, she said she's got a lot older now, so she didn't grow up with it. She's sort of seen the transition, if you like, after her own. She's developed her work. She says the age in which we live, this non-stop distraction is making it more impossible for the younger generation to ever have the curiosity or discipline. So it's a beautiful way of putting it. You need to be on your own to find out anything. Which I think is a beautiful way of expressing that creative moment. I actually believe you can get extraordinary creativity in community, but I agree with that point. There needs to be a moment when you're on your own. And of course that includes not having access to other people through any other means, so not even being connected in any way to your smartphone. And that famous musician, of which I only know one song, and I remember the arrow going to the tree, Bryan Adams. What was that song? I think we need to start singing it, don't we? What is it? What was it? Was it Robbie? What was it? Everything I Do. I do it for you. Thanks, Brian. That's great. No one's up for waving their cigarette lighters and singing? No? Okay. Anyway, he says similar things. Social media is a giant distraction to the ultimate aim, which is honing your craft as a songwriter. There are people who are exceptional at it. However, if you can do both things, that's fantastic. If you are a writer, the time is better spent on a clever lyric than a clever tweet. Thanks, Brian. Now, I would actually, I agree there are things that are distracting, and so we can say social media is one. I never think the thing is the problem. In the Industrial Revolution, people blame the Industrial Revolution. The Industrial Revolution is not the problem. In some ways, it was absolutely extraordinary. Has made our lives so much easier. The problem is how we handle it. It's our internal life, not the external. So for me, social media is incredible. I can connect with people all parts of the world instantly. I remember I was in hospital with Freddie. He was kind of on the brink between life and death. And I've just all night just had streams of people from Facebook bringing support in ways that were completely impossible, would have been completely impossible. So social media isn't the problem. I think to vilify it is actually doing that classic thing which Adam and Eve did in Eden, which is put the blame somewhere else. It is just what it is. It's not a good or a bad thing. It's how we handle it. And this man, Ronald Rollheiser, actually wrote this in his book, A Search for Christian Spirituality, in the 90s, so way before this kind of technological revolution. This is now believers, this is followers of Jesus, for every kind of reason, good and bad, are distracting ourselves into spiritual oblivion. It's not that we have anything against God or depth or spirit, and we would like these things in our lives. It's just that we are habitually too preoccupied to have any of these show up on our radar. We are more busy than bad, more distracted than non-spiritual. Pathological busyness, distraction and restlessness are major blocks today within our spiritual lives. I agree with him. We are distracted. We potentially are. And he goes into actually the materialism of the particularly of the 90s. I actually just think that's the human condition. We're either in denial or we're seeking connectedness with Jesus. And when we have any sort of form of money, we buy forms of escapism and distraction. That's why the poor are more blessed, because they don't have that option. It's just taken away from them. They can't buy escapism. I think this is the human condition, and each age has a different way that we find to distract ourselves. And on Christmas Day, I talked about Mary and Martha, two people. And Martha was a very good person, very good. She opened her home. She paid a price to host Jesus himself. She knew who he was. The seven I am witnesses in John, she was the woman that heard him say, "I am the resurrection and the life." Incredible intimacy, incredible hunger for him, incredible thirst for him. But she was very angry on this occasion because Mary wasn't helping host. She wasn't doing jobs. She was in the traditional Jewish posture of kneeling at the feet of her rabbi, Jesus, listening to him. And Martha says, "Don't you care, Lord?" And I said on Christmas Day, I'll say it again, of course he cares. He deeply cares. He cares so much that he came in human form and took the fullness of our broken condition upon himself and died, and it was buried with him and raised from the dead. He really, really, really cares more than Martha ever knew at that moment. So don't you care? I'm doing all the work and she's just sitting there doing nothing. And Jesus says a really interesting thing. He doesn't deal with Mary at all. He just deals with Martha. And he says, you are worried and upset about many things. Your issue is you are distracted. There is only one thing needful. Mary has chosen the better part and it won't be taken away from her. There was just one thing, and the one thing was sitting at the feet of Jesus, listening to him, being taught by him. And in the Jewish tradition, it wouldn't have just been listening, as in a Greco-Roman context where your student taught you stuff and you learn information. It would be about transformation. You listened in order to embody it and flesh it and become like your rabbi. She chose the better part. What I love about this obsession with distraction is there's this deep consciousness that there is something worth focusing on. Because otherwise distraction wouldn't be distraction. It would just be things we do. There is a deep sense in the human condition that we should be focusing on something. And here we have that brilliant revelation. It's actually someone. There is a focus for all our lives. The Word who sustains the whole universe by his power and grace is the one we can focus on. And anything that takes us away from him, even hosting him, but not actually connecting with him, is distraction. I think social media can lead us to him as well as lead us away from him. Social media is not the issue. I believe materialism could even connect us with him or lead us away from him. Material things are not the issue. What the issue is, what's our focus? The one thing needed. And why we're looking at practices is we're looking at a way of life that we can begin to move in together as community, as Hope Community, putting some things in our lives that enable us to slow down for loving union with Jesus. Just to slow down and be with him and become like him in order to embody him and, as Chris said, change the world around us. There is a golden triangle of transformation, which, because of my limited PowerPoint skills, if you've seen this before, is still blue because I couldn't actually change the colour. So weak. If we could just see it. This is what we'll be looking at this term. And it really shows how we're changed. The top bit of the triangle is the Holy Spirit. Prayer. And it's really, really important, whatever we do, how we dig deep into this stuff, that we remember this thing that Richard Foster says in The Celebration of Discipline, which is an absolutely brilliant book and a brilliant point, that we have to make peace that the only person who can change anyone is God. if we go into any of this thinking we can fix ourselves, or even more dangerously, we can fix other people, then we fail immediately. The judgmentalism, hypocrisy, legalism, self-righteousness, all the things we absolutely hate come in. The only person who can change anyone is God, by the power of the Holy Spirit, through prayer and through, if it is my life, me posturing myself for that change. That is absolutely critical. This is Dallas Willard's Golden Triangle of Transformation. So we always remember that. And I think as a body, we do remember that. We know that it is the Holy Spirit that changes us. But as we progress, as we move forward together, as we dig deep, as we find some stuff in ourselves, which isn't great, as we start to see things in other people, which isn't great, we always stand on this one truth, that only God changes people. We've all been with people at Christmas who have difficulties, maybe there's complexities, maybe things aren't straightforward. The only person that can change them is the Holy Spirit. We cannot say that enough. We want to retain a humility and a mercy and a grace in the way we treat one another as we go deeper into being transformed to be like Jesus. And then the second one we looked at briefly, I did a talk on it in November, you can find it online, is called Progress, How We Change. And actually, the beauty of a redemptive life of following Jesus is the very place we change is in trials. And if you all notice that from those practices we saw, especially physical fitness is a brilliant example that we get stronger literally by the tearing of our muscle and the repairing. That's what you do when you do resistance or strength training. It's exactly the same spiritually. It's the little tearing. It's the places of pain. It's those places are actually the places that bring transformation. So what, as we talked about, Western secularism can offer is addiction and distraction. That's all it can offer to heal us. But what Jesus can do is in the very place that we want to be addicted to numb ourselves against or distracted from, that is the place where we actually sit there in that space. God can actually change us and make us spiritually fit, make us more like Jesus. And that's amazing. There's a talk on that. And then finally, what we're going to look at this term, both in our individual lives and as community, is this idea of practices, things that Jesus had in his life and his early followers and the first 1-2 millennia of followers of Jesus and many, many followers of Jesus before Jesus as well, many, many believers in God. These are nothing new, and you find versions of them all over the world. It's just ways that we posture ourselves for connectedness with Jesus. A brilliant image being a trellis where a vine, we're designed to abide in the vine, the trellis that enables the vine to stand straight. Things that we can put in, they are not life in themselves, they do not bring life in themselves, but they posture ourselves for life coming from the vine. We set our intention to do it, over time they become habit, and then before we know it, it's a new normal, and we're living out a life that is like Jesus. We don't have to strive and try to be happy and joyful and thankful and peaceful anymore. We just are, because Christ is forged in us and our natural reactions are his natural reactions within us, something we all crave. So that's what we're going to be looking at this term. And what's brilliant about practice is there's no urgency. We've got the rest of our lives. We want to form a way of life amongst us that facilitates a permanent connectedness with Jesus in community. And I finally finished with, I talked a bit about this on Christmas Day as well. Something I am obsessed by is what people makes people happy. I find it absolutely fascinating, the idea of happiness, the exploration of it, the neurology of it, and the psychology of it. And one of the top thing that makes people happy above money and freedom and other things like trust and kindness, which are amazing things and all important, is togetherness. It's community. That is the top factor that makes people happy. And that makes sense because we're wired for connectedness. We're actually built to love God with our heart, soul, mind and strength, and we're built to love our neighbour as ourselves. And any of us, whether we know or believe in God or not, when we violate those, we actually become unhappy because we're designed for togetherness. And when that's violated, there is a brokenheartedness that comes in. So all of these things, these practices, this isn't about disappearing somewhere and doing our own thing. This is actually about, even the ones that we do on our own, about giving us the character and the resource to be well together, to be in community together, to be happy with people different from us, and not just feel just deep love and emotion. And I just want to say from the bottom of my heart personally, today, I just feel so happy at the togetherness here. I just feel such a deep love for everyone here. I see you all and just love you and feel that love. And that is surely the good news that we're all desiring to be forged within us. So happy new year. As we press into happiness, let's think of that core value that makes us happy, which is togetherness. And that these practices are really facilitating that, a capacity to finally be able to be together again and be happy again.